You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up today after 7, it's Latino USA. This week, tales of dealing with adversity. From a veteran who suffered severe burns to an Olympic athlete who didn't quite make the cut. That's coming up tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
Right now, in 1967, President Lyndon Johnson established the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, known as the Kerner Commission. Its members were charged with examining the causes of urban violence and unrest, as well as recommending ways to improve racial relations in the nation.
Our next guest sees the parallels between the issues that the Kerner Commission was wrestling with nearly 50 years ago and the conditions in Milwaukee that contributed to the protests that and the unrest that broke out over the weekend. Reggie Jackson joins us now. He's a longtime resident of the Sherman Park neighborhood where the weekend's events played out. His Milwaukee Independent article on the subject called Evidence of Things Unknown is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Reggie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you point out parallels between conditions in the 1960s that led to racial unrest and those that contributed to the events in Milwaukee over the weekend. What parallels do you see?
Well, a couple things to start with. Segregation, racial segregation, especially in bigger cities like Milwaukee, Detroit, Newark, New Jersey, Chicago, Los Angeles. Those were things that isolated the black community in all of those places. And of course, we know that Milwaukee is considered the most segregated city in the country. And in many respects, lots of the black residents of Milwaukee live in very segregated communities. Sherman Park is not exactly the most segregated part of Milwaukee. There are some white residents who live fairly close to where the park is. But the segregation does play a part. And the other big factor that relates those times in the late 60s to today are the levels of unemployment within those communities, the dire prospects for people to find quality jobs. If we look at the unemployment rate, especially for younger people, 16 to 19, those rates are really, really extremely high in the black community in Milwaukee. And so a lot of the people that you saw contributing to this were young people. Many of them were probably unemployed. And so if we look at what the Kerner Commission talked about, it talked about economic conditions being a big factor. It talked about segregation being a big factor. And it also looked at 24 different riots that happened around the country, these civil unrest that happened in multiple cities. And the conclusion that they drew in terms of what precipitated those, they said that in about half of them, the last incident that kind of sparked everything, there were other incidents that kind of led up to it, but the one that typically sparked it, the last incident that happened before the unrest occurred, was police action. And so we saw that here in Milwaukee, as well as in Ferguson, Missouri, Baltimore, Maryland. A lot of the things that we've seen the past several years have mirrored those events that happened in the 1960s around the country.
So you're saying, according to that Kerner report, there may have been tensions and anxieties and issues filtering through the community for a long time, but that the final spark was a police action.
Yes, absolutely. If you live within the black community in Milwaukee, you know that the relationship between the police department and the black community has never been very strong. And this goes back decades to the time when Harold Breyer was the chief of police. The police had a horrible reputation, and in their treating of black citizens very poorly led to a distrust of the police department. That's never really been overcome. We've had a variety of different police chiefs since then, but still the relationship between the black community and police still is not a good relationship. And if we look over the past several years at several high-profile cases, the killing of Dontre Hamilton in Red Arrow Park in 2014, we look at Derek Williams dying in the back of a squad car, not being assisted by those police officers, and several other incidents. These are things that stick out in the minds of black Milwaukee. We look back in the mid-90s, I believe it was, when Frank Jude was beaten beaten by police officers on the south side of Milwaukee. We look at the cases of the officers from the district on Locust Street who were doing strip searches of black people in public, doing anal cavity searches of black people in public. And so there's a perception that's based on reality in the black community that the police do not respect black people, that they don't treat them the same as they treat people outside of our community. And so those conditions really were ripe for something to happen and lead to this type of unrest.
Now, some reports have come out that the police officer who shot Saville Smith was African-American, and that Smith, also African-American, had a gun when he turned toward the officer while fleeing his car. Do those facts change anything for you?
I don't think that they really do. First of all, I have to say that the details of what happened on that particular day were not given to the public on the day that it happened. People didn't know the details of the encounter with the police officer, Mr. Smith. That didn't come out until the following day when Chief Flynn returned to town and kind of gave some of those details. And in terms of the officer being African-American, I think there's a perception that people believe African-American officers are viewed differently by the African-American community than white officers or Hispanic or Asian. But in reality, when you talk to people on the street, they'll tell you that they look at them all the same because they're all police officers. They all wear the same blue uniform. There is a consistent code of silence among police officers when they do things that they're not supposed to do. And so people in the community view them as all being the same, regardless of what racial group that they are attached to.
We're talking right now with Reggie Jackson, resident of the Sherman Park neighborhood, and he wrote a piece called Evidence of Things Unknown for the Milwaukee Independent, and that's linked right now on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about this incident in Milwaukee over the weekend when violence broke out as a reaction to the shooting death of Saville Smith by Milwaukee police. And Reggie, you were saying it doesn't seem to matter if there are more African-American officers on the force. That's not something that might change the equation. What do you think would improve the relationship between communities of color and police officers?
Well, I actually do believe that it would make a difference if there were more police officers who were African-American on the police force, people that are familiar with those communities, that have ties to the community, that are able to really relate to the types of issues people in that community are dealing with. What I was saying earlier, though, is in terms of the perception of the officer who shot Mr. Smith, whether he was white or black, I don't think that that really makes a difference to most people in the community. All they know is that there was a police officer who shot a black man. They didn't get the details of the fact that Mr. Smith had a gun. But, you know, when you look at all of these cases around the country over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years, whether the person was armed or unarmed who died as a result of an encounter with the police, people within the black community, many of them, now there's a variety of different voices, a variety of different opinions, obviously, but many people will tell you that it's simply when they encounter the police, they see the police as a force within that community that's not necessarily there to protect and serve them because of how disrespectful the police are to so many people, and people always share those stories with other individuals. Now, one of the things I think that would make a huge difference, and this isn't just here in Milwaukee, but nationwide with police departments, a lot of people within the African-American community would tell you this, that they don't feel the police are held to the same standards as regular citizens. If a police officer kills someone illegally versus a regular citizen killing someone illegally, they are not typically charged with the same offense. If you look at the case of Oscar Grant, who was killed by a Bay Area Rapid Transit officer in 2012, I believe, that officer obviously shot this young man in the back. He was unarmed. He was handcuffed. He didn't face a first-degree murder charge. And this is typically what happens. People feel that the police, even when it's proven that they murdered someone, that they're not charged with murder as a regular citizen would be. And so people have a perception that the police need to be treated the same as regular citizens when they do things that are illegal. And until that happens, people are not going to have a great deal of trust in the criminal justice system. People really don't understand that there was a Supreme Court case that is directly related to all of these police shootings. And in this case, I wish I could remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I can't. But in this case, it basically revolved around whether or not police officers had the right to use deadly force. And the Supreme Court ruled that as long as those officers felt that their lives were threatened in terms of physical bodily harm or imminent death to them or any civilians that were in the vicinity, then they had the right to use the greatest amount of force necessary, including deadly force. And as a result of that law, you find in case after case after case, the police officers who are accused of killing people, whether they're armed or unarmed, the response from the officer is always exactly the same, that person in that situation made me feel fear for my life. And it reminds me very clearly of the history of lynching in the United States of America. When you go back and look at the history of lynching, you'll find that the results of those investigations of lynchings were almost always the same in terms of what people said afterwards. It said that this person, even though there may have been a mob of 10, 15, 20,000 people there to witness it, they would say in the reports that this person died at the hands of persons unknown. So that's another parallel, is that we hear the same stories over and over again, and quite frankly, people within the African American community just don't believe that these versions are the truth. When we see the case of Michael Scott, who was shot in the back by a police officer in South Carolina, the official version, the police report that was written by those officers on the scene, lied and said that Mr. Scott had taken the taser from the officer, and had it not been for a civilian filming that, we would have never known the truth. The official version would have been the version had that civilian who took the video of that had he not come forward. And so as a result of things like that and anecdotal stories that we hear within our community about police mistreating people, we find that there is a great deal of distrust, not only in the police, but in the district attorney's office and the entire apparatus that's related to charging police officers. So it really, unless we can reform the system and have the officers held accountable and responsible at the same level that we hold civilians, then I really think that there will continue to be a great deal of distrust of officers and the system.
We're talking with Reggie Jackson right now, who lives in the Sherman Park neighborhood of Milwaukee, where violence broke out this weekend as a reaction to the shooting death of Sylville Smith by Milwaukee police.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen firsthand the challenges, the tensions between African-American communities and police in Milwaukee and other parts of the state? Can you relate to the frustration that seems to be boiling up after this latest incident? Or do you feel there's never an excuse for property destruction and violence? Do you see a way forward for better relations between different racial groups in Milwaukee, in the state, in the nation, and between police and minority communities? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page where you can read Reggie's article.
We'll continue this conversation here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation with Reggie Jackson. He lives in the Sherman Park neighborhood of Milwaukee, where protests and unrest took place this weekend after a Milwaukee police officer shot and killed a man during a traffic stop.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How can racial disparities and racial differences in Milwaukee and the rest of the state be addressed? What responsibility do you think residents, community members, law enforcement, politicians have for creating meaningful change, given the many issues that exist? What should be the top priority? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Reggie, I want to ask you, we spoke with Wisconsin State Senator Lena Taylor yesterday, and one of the things that she had said is that maybe some manner of civics education, civics lessons, would be helpful so that people knew how to protest, and I'm assuming protest peacefully. What do you think about that suggestion of hers?
Well, I think that's a great suggestion. I've spent quite a bit of time the last several days out in the community where these events have taken place, talking to people who are residents of the area, talking to people who've come in as part of the protest, and a couple things that I think need to be really made clear. If you look at what happened in terms of the looting, in terms of the businesses being burned, that was a small segment of people, many of them from outside the Sherman Park community. I talked to some young people who lived directly across the street from where the BP gas station was day before yesterday, who were actually out that night where the gas station was set on fire. And what they told me was that there was a small group of people from the community who'd gathered in that area, and in addition to that, there were people from other parts of the city who saw something on Facebook or Instagram or things of that nature who started to gather in the community. They told me that they saw people using their cell phones to invite other people to come and participate in what was going on at that particular time. And so what you saw was a kind of a festive atmosphere, people dancing, people singing, all of these different things before they began to damage the property. And so what the people in that community have told me in very clear terms is that they were not happy about the businesses that were lost. They were very upset that the gas station was burned. They were upset that the O'Reilly Auto Parts and the jewelry store, which was damaged, and the bank that was damaged, and the beauty supply store, they were very upset about that. I didn't hear a single person out of all of the people that I talked to, and I literally talked to dozens of people. I did not hear a single person who approved of those particular things happening. Now, when you look at the report that I wrote, one of the things I talked about was the impact of young people in these things that happened. Because when you see the video of the young people who are, damaging the gas station before it's set on fire, you see that that's a group of people that look like they're in their teens or perhaps their early 20s. And one of the things I talked about is that people of that age, when they do things, they don't really understand necessarily the long-term consequences of what they do.
Are you talking about the brain science taking a while to catch up?
Yes, absolutely. Brain science tells us that the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of our brains that helps us to reason things out, helps us to make decisions about long-term consequences, that part isn't fully developed until the age of 25. So people make very foolish decisions at that age, and they don't understand the long-term consequences. And so
I'm going to jump in here so we can get to our callers. We have a lot of people waiting to talk to you, Reggie. And we're going to go first to Simi in Milwaukee. Hi, Simi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to comment. I live in Sherman Park. I'm about nine blocks from where they burnt down the gas station. Nine blocks, and maybe three blocks away from Burleigh. And I live on a segregated block or integrated block. Maybe 30% are white. And we get along fabulously with our neighbors. We have no problems at all. Our neighbors help each other out. When things go wrong or there's damage done to a car or something, everyone's out helping. The kids get along even well.
Simi, thanks for that. Describing a community feeling there that isn't segregated, that it is a black community, white community living and working together. What do you think about that portrayal of Sherman Park, Reggie?
That's absolutely the case. It's an integrated community. There aren't a lot of whites there. There are a significant number of whites as compared to many other neighborhoods in the city. But when I was out that first morning after the unrest occurred, I was out very early that morning, driving around, talking to people, taking photographs of the damage. And one of the things that I saw immediately that morning, and I was out there for probably about 4 hours at least from about 7 o'clock until about 11 that morning, and what I saw consistently were people from the community who were out there having discussions about what happened, but at the same time they were having those discussions, they were picking up trash. They had trash bags with them. They were passing out gloves for people to help pick up trash. They had brooms and they were sweeping. So everybody that I saw out there that morning, at the park, at the gas station, over by the O'Reilly Auto Parts, and all the places that were damaged, there were people from the community who were out there trying to reconcile by having conversations and actually cleaning up the community that they hold very dear to their hearts. So there was a balance of people, blacks as well as whites, who were out there that morning, people who care about the community, people who've, in many cases, lived in that community for an extended period of time.
Well, Simi, thank you for the call. And we go next to Andreas in Madison. Andreas, hi.
Oh, hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm very happy to hear somebody like Reggie. I don't know him, but I was going crazy trying to talk to you because he just hit in the the nail on the head. We need so much change in the police force, not only Milwaukee or I'm myself from Madison, Wisconsin, but nationwide. And as you can tell, I have an accent and a minority. And also, I was trying to become a police officer a couple of years ago. I went to the police academy, and the idea, perception, the police officers always get the advantage of saying that they shoot somebody in defense. Always you have to stop the threat. And that definition was never explained to me. As much as I asked for that definition, they just tell you to stop the threat. And I think they abuse that, and that's why we have so much problem in the United States about that.
Andreas, thank you for that comment. And Reggie, there's about 30 seconds left here, but looking again at police reform, Andreas was getting at, and some of what you were talking about how to handle that threat and whether the police officer should be able to say, I felt threatened and therefore I shot. What do you think is needed, again, going forward in Milwaukee to repair that community?
Well, I think from the perspective of the police, they need to have more definitive and long-term training on implicit bias and the role that plays and how officers perceive people within the community. And in addition to that, just simple de-escalation training to de-escalate situations so they don't get to the point where there's a feeling of the officer fearing for his life. Those things and also conversations with the community. I'm a member of the board for the Zeidler Center for Public Discussion, and we have been involved in having police community dialogues for the past several months, and those have really played an important role in bridging the gap between people in the community and the police department, as well as the work that I do as chairman of the board for America's Black Holocaust Museum, training people about racism and bias and all of these things and how they play a role in our society. It's imperative that we really learn more about the history of these things, mm-hmm. and look mm-hmm. at the history of these events today in parallels to the events in the past and see them.
Reggie, thank you so much for your time. That was Reggie Jackson, resident of the Sherman Park neighborhood where the protests and unrest centered this weekend. His article is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.